The regular Cambria Community Services District Board meeting for February will come to order. Will everybody please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that Director Elon Funky Ballou is absent today. He's on vacation. The four remaining board members are present, so we have a quorum. Council, is there a report from closed session?
We had a closed session, I believe, at the end of the last meeting where direction was given to District Council and outside representatives, and no final decisions reportable that need to be reported were made.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is a review of the agenda. Are there any additions, deletions, or consent calendar items to be pulled?
I have one, and that's for the January 27, 2005 minutes. That's item 7, a portion of item 7B. We'll consider those next month. We'll keep the December 16th, 2004 minutes, but not the January minutes.
Okay. So 7D has been deleted?
A portion of 7B.
A portion of 7D.
Correct.
Has been deleted.
Just the January 27th.
January 27th.
Meeting.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There is an appeal. A fire sprinkler appeal that is on the agenda. There was some concern that the staff reports had not been prepared. I understand that the appellant has a construction schedule to meet and would like to have the appeal heard today. Chief Putney, I understand that you have already reviewed the appeal and that you've rendered a report and that you've delivered that report to the appellant. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So would you be prepared to address the issues in the appeal if the appeal goes forward today?
Absolutely.
I'm going to leave it to the pleasure of the board. This is item 8. B, and so all of the I's and haven't been dotted and the T's crossed procedurally, but I think the substance of the appeal has been reviewed by the chief, and so the question is whether or not we go forward. Is there any objection to going forward?
Yeah.
Hearing none, then item... excuse me, it's 8B. 8B will be heard.
One last correction. The district engineer just brought to my attention that item 10G needs to be pulled. That's resolution 11-2005 for the Water Department budget amendment for the Corollo Engineers Task Order. 10G.
Okay, that is being pulled.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And the last item is item 10B. 10B is the item that involves the Memorandum of Understanding with the Cambria Community Center. That item has been postponed. For those of you... Welcome, Chief.
Thank you. Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is on.
I can't hear that. Mr. President, members of the board, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to come before you today. I also want to apologize. Missed out. I had to cancel out last time, and we've been trying to get up here for a little while. So I did want to thank you and apologize for that. Real quick, before I recognize some people in North Coast Ocean Rescue, wanted to take a second and let you guys know and let the community of Cambria know. A lot of people are shocked that they have a Coast Guard station, and they do. Morro Bay Our crew out of Morro Bay Coast Guard responds up here. We probably run 30 to 40% of our calls off the coast of Cambria every year, and we don't get up here by land as much as we'd like to, but we're out there, and we appreciate the kindness and support we get from the community of Cambria, though it's not always readily apparent. We work real close with Chief Putney and his crews, and really appreciate it. And contrary to some of the recent media, we do have good communications and are working real well together. So I just wanted to pass that on and let you guys know you got a real top-notch town and top-notch community and fire department as well. So
we appreciate that.
Bob, I'm going to need your help with some of this. But one of the things we do work with North Coast Ocean Rescue quite a bit, and we have Coast Guard Station Morro Bay. We cover 100 miles of coastline. We run all the way from up above the Monterey County line all the way down to Conception. So we have a large area response, and without organizations like North Coast Ocean Rescue and Cambria Fire, we wouldn't be able to do half of what we as an entire organization of rescuers do, and the service that they provide to not only the community of Cambria but also to the whole area up here is unreplaceable. They volunteer their time, they volunteer their efforts, and they operate well outside of city limits as well, and there's quite a few people that are around today thanks to their efforts. So we wanted to recognize that 10-year anniversary, though it's a little late, and I got a list of some people here, and I'm going to read. I wrote a letter of appreciation that will go out to all the members of the team, and if any of them are here right now, I'd love to have them come up. And
I see several in the audience.
Yeah,
here they
and
come.
They're a great bunch, and again, we really appreciate this, and if I butcher anybody's name, I wholeheartedly apologize. But the list of names are Dan Bouchane. I'm sorry, Dan, if you're here. Tom Benton, Steve Bitto, Ben Bohr, Michael Casey, Michael Gallagher, Wayne Gracie, Dan Martin, James McGuire, Mike Oliver, Tracy O'Malley, Sam Prada, Bob Putney, Richard Stacy, and Justin Smith. I hope I got everybody. And today we're going to be giving them each a letter, and I'll let actually Bob get the handout if they're here. But I'd like to read what the letter is going to say to everybody. But it's congratulations to you and the other members of the North Coast Ocean Rescue Team on your 10-year anniversary of the inception of your valuable asset. Over the years, NCOR has valiantly distinguished itself through its ocean rescue response off the Cambria coast. On numerous occasions, the Coast Guard relied upon your timely response and vast experience of your volunteer crew to carry out difficult rescues, many of which had been accomplished long before any other assets could arrive to your distant location. Your team's dedication has not stopped there. NCOR has carried on the mantle of community service, providing numerous hours of ocean and beach cleanup, wildlife aid, public education, along with its rescue and recovery assistance in the Cambria area. Though many members have come and gone, the North Coast Ocean Rescue Team has continued to uphold the highest traditions of maritime search and rescue. By your dedication, sacrifice, and professionalism, you reflected great credit upon yourselves and the valuable partnership between our units. Again, congratulations on the remarkable 10 years and good luck on future endeavors, success. Signed, Senior Chief Boatswain Mate Michael Sandin, U.S. Coast Guard. And there's Mr. Smith's letter. So.
All right. You got some things to get it off.
Before you all leave, I think a couple of photographers here would like to get a group shot, so we'll just take a little time out here, and if you want to arrange them in any particular way, go ahead.
I do have one more thing real quick we'll give it to Bob to put up put up the fire station, but we do have a plaque from the Coast Guard, U.S. Coast Guard Motor Lifeboat Station, Morro Bay, and the date is wrong. Told my guy, my engraver, to...
Next, we have a recognition of PROS Commissioner Jess Bathke, who is retiring. And because of Director Coben's close association with PROS and having been a former PROS Commissioner and her involvement with parks, recreation, trails, and so forth in the community for so many years. I'm going to defer to Joan and have Joan handle this little ceremony.
Is it better to face this
way? And Jim Ellman, the chairman of PROS, is here as well to participate.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, unfortunately, Jess is not here, and I know he's aware that the proclamation was going to be today, so I'm only assuming that some emergency or something must have come up, because he's a very punctual person. So we can do one of two things. We could move this to the next meeting, if you wish, or we could present it at the March 8th PROS Commission meeting.
Well, I think we ought to do it at a board meeting here. Jess has put in
yes.
a lot of time over an extended period of years, and I think we ought to properly recognize him. So if you'd like to put it off to the March meeting, that's
fine with me, and I'll
fine
make
with
sure
us,
he's
I'm
here.
Sure. Great.
Well,
Jim, are you going to be around for the rest of the meeting?
For the rest of the meeting?
Yes.
No.
Okay. I was going to suggest that perhaps if he comes in late, we can interrupt the proceedings. And
he's a very punctual person. I'm assuming that something must have come up.
Okay. Well, why don't we put it off until March then? Because I think it would be important for you to participate in the ceremony
Fine.
As well. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next presentation is actually a combined presentation and proclamation from the American Red Cross, and I understand we have board members Wynn Randall and board member Wynn Randall and public support director Kelly Van Buren here today. Would you like to come up and tell us about Red Cross Month?
I'm Kelly Van Buren, and this is one of our board members, Wynn Randall. She's been with Red Cross for, oh my goodness, years and years. I can't even imagine. So we just wanted to, you know, really get out in each of the areas in our community for Red Cross Month and, you know, get out in the public's eye as much as possible and make sure that everybody knows of our services, because we really are here to help each and every community member in, you know, various ways. And since we are located in San Luis, we find it essential that we get up to Cambry every once in a while. And we do have board members from Cambry and volunteers up here as well. But we just really appreciate you inviting us up here today, especially with Red Cross Month coming up. We're just trying our best to get out there.
We appreciate all the good work you do. And as you're speaking, our general manager, Tammy Rudock, is approaching you from behind. And she has a proclamation from the Cambria Community Services District Board proclaiming March 2005 as American Red Cross Month.
That's exactly
Tammy?
Right. I'm not going to read the proclamation in whole since it covers the frame, but I thought I'd just pick out a couple of the paragraphs. For more than 88 years, the Red Cross in San Luis Obispo County has been the place where citizens join together, and the generosity and compassion of the American people finds purpose. It's been the place where someone who may not know you will still give you their time, money, and life-saving skills, save you from drowning, or provide you with shelter. Never has this been more evident than these past few years when the San Simeon earthquake wreaked havoc on our community and a deadly tsunami struck our neighbors in Asia and Africa. San Luis Obispo County responded swiftly and generously, and in overwhelming numbers chose their Red Cross as the place to turn their caring into action. They have also spearheaded a campaign to immunize millions of African children against measles, a disease nearly forgotten in America, but a deadly killer in other parts of the world. And let's see, in celebrating American Red Cross Month, we are celebrating the humanitarian and volunteer spirit here in San Luis Obispo County and all across America. Now, therefore, I, on behalf of Board President Greg Sanders, by virtue of the authority vested in him as President of the Board of Directors for the Cambria Community Services District, do hereby proclaim March 2005 as American Red Cross Month. I urge all Americans to continue to volunteer their time and give generously to the American Red Cross.
Again, congratulations.
You're welcome.
And on behalf of the entire community, thank you for all the good work you do.
Thank you. For
really appreciate
us.
It. You bet. You're welcome back anytime. And the last presentation is one that I'm particularly looking forward to because it is a major step in the direction of providing better fire protection and other emergency services in Cambria.
And the constitutions of the United States and the State of California against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and of the State of California, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will and faithfully discharge my duties with the Cambria Community Services District Fire Department upon which I am about to enter. Thank you. Welcome aboard, and if you'd like to say a couple of words, you may, but you're not obligated to, either way. You'd just like to get to work, right? Okay, terrific. Thank you very much. Is the representative of the Sheriff's Department here today? If so, we'll have the Sheriff's Department report.
I apologize, I'm out of uniform today.
That's okay.
A little incognito.
Undercover work today?
I am Commander Weckerly, representing the Sheriff's Department. What I'd like to talk about today is a new program that the county is offering to the entire county, not just the community of Cambria. It's called Project Life. The Sheriff's Department will be facilitating this program, and what it is for families with family members that have Alzheimer's or dementia or some type of mental problem. And what we do is we put a bracelet on them that is very similar to an airplane box or the new things that you have in your car, where if your car is stolen, we can find it for you. It's very similar to that, so that if a member of your family walks away from your home, we can find them via this tracking device. The program is estimated to cost $25 a month. However, my understanding is there are several community organizations who are working so that if a family has a monetary problem, they will not be denied. And so if you know of any members of the community that could, you know, use this program, please contact my department and we will get you with the individual in charge of our program. And other than that, if you have a question?
They would just call the Sheriff's Department main number in San Luis Obispo?
Yes. Sergeant Mackey is actually the person in charge of it for us. But because of our shift work, sometimes it's easier if you call the Sheriff's Department, leave a message, and he will call you back.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We're now at the point where Bob Gressens will give us the monthly water master plan, desalination, and water storage facilities report. Bob?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. You'll see that we have several activities going on in parallel here, and I'll just hit a few of the high points. First of all, the water master plan report. There's three reports that have been posted on our website at cambriacsd.org. They've not been formally adopted by your board because we're still working on the program level environmental impact report that will cover the water master plan update. RBF Consulting is completing this environmental impact report, and we estimate that EIR from this build-out reduction study, so they're linked. That will address the growth-inducing aspects of a future water supply, i.e. Desalination in our case. The completion of the administrative draft for the build-out reduction plan is approximately May of this year, so that's coming together. We had a pretty good meeting this morning on that, and we have another working meeting on it tomorrow morning with RBF. And I know Glenn LaJoy is here today if there are some detailed questions later on. Moving on to desalination project, the desalination project has started, at least at the engineering study level. We are working with Corello engineers as far as assessing feasibility of the buried below surface collector well as well as a buried brine discharge system. That'll take some scientific study and drilling in the San Simeon Beach area. In that area, we know that the deposits from prior geophysical studies, which were basically above ground surface studies that didn't disturb the ground, that there's about 60 to 110 feet of alluvial deposits. Exactly what that's made of, we have to determine by drilling. That would determine whether it's a loose sand or gravel or clay layers, and we have to determine that to fully understand the feasibility of a collector well.
Where is that location, Bob?
That's at the San Simeon State Beach, near the lagoon area where the mouth of the creek empties into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a channel carved out through geologic times that's been filled in with deposits over the years. So we're trying to determine what the characteristics of those deposits are.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a suitable layer or two of the looser, more permeable sand and gravel, and we can prove it scientifically that there's no impact to the lagoon area, that greatly reduces the potential environmental impacts and most likely the construction costs on the project. So that's a real key piece of information that we're after. We've started the permit process on that. I know we have a minor use permit going through with county right now. There's been some applications made to the Army Corps of Engineers as well as the California Coastal Commission. So that's the current effort underway. There is a task order that has to follow this with Corello engineers. Unfortunately, it didn't come together in time for today's meeting, so I'd like to pick that up at the next available meeting time. But that would be for additional cost with the drilling equipment. Access to the beach is fairly complicated because of the environmental issues. We might have to hire a crane to lift equipment down there. We're looking at a very special piece of drilling equipment that uses what's known as the ultrasonic rotary core method. It doesn't require drilling muds, and it might drill a little bit faster than a conventional drilling equipment. So there's a lot behind the scenes that's happening on that to make that possible to get that study done.
Is that location seaward of the mean high tide line?
It's both. It's both in land side as well as a little bit on the seaward side.
Okay.
The besides the geotechnical investigation, we have been working with the Army Corps of Engineers on their administrative effort to get the project cooperation agreement signed off fully by the Army Corps. They do a fairly detailed project management plan that involves a master schedule, quality control plan, and so forth that they're working on. We've provided some help to them in putting that package together, as well as a full packet on the project cooperation agreement. We see that coming together by about a May to June time frame, where hopefully their final level will be signed off at that point. That's important because it could provide 75% funding to the project, with a 25% match coming from the district. In parallel with that, we have a grant application in with the state for Prop 50 funding, and that was submitted back in January. And if we get funding from that, we can use that towards a 25% share as well. So there's a lot of strategies going on, a lot of activity happening behind the scenes on that particular project. The next related item I'm going to talk about is the Urban Water Management Plan update. The Urban Water Management Plan update is a report that goes to the State Department of Water Resources. It's supposed to go every 5 years on years ending 00 or 5. I shouldn't say zero or 5. And ours is out of date. The last one we saw was dated around 1989. So we're bringing it up to 2005 standards. And it's...
While you're on that point, Bob, since potentially $5 million is at stake, I'm sure the board members would agree to a special meeting if it's necessary. So you need to let us know.
I would suggest, say, if the week before, maybe the 17th of March, might be a good timeline for that.
Maybe we should pencil that in now. And as we get closer to your completion of the report, we can solidify that date.
Isn't it 17th of March? Isn't that St. Patrick's Day?
But you're French, Don,
close.
So it's a...
I should know because my wife's Irish, so I'm pretty sure it's St. Patrick's Day.
Well, I think it'd be a good occasion for a celebration, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'll get with the board president, and we'll get that set up.
Yeah, we'll have a special meeting set up.
Okay, great. Moving on then beyond the Urban Water Management Plan update, the Pine Knolls Tank Replacement Project. Of course, you've been following that closely. We did have a very good meeting with the Planning Commission on February 10th, at which time they approved the project. They added a few conditions to it that we just received yesterday. But we knew about them from the meeting, so there's nothing earth-shaking about that particular information. Right now, we're probably looking at about a 5 to 6 week time frame in order to get through the appeal process and before the project could start. That's also subject to weather conditions as well as some of the environmental conditions. The key environmental condition is whether there's any nesting species of concern for about 6 different species of birds, and we have to have a biologist go through the area ahead of time to make sure they're not nesting in the area and wouldn't be disturbed before we could start construction. So that's what we're up against there right now.
So we're just waiting for the appeal periods to run, and if they run without an appeal, we can begin construction right away, potentially, if there aren't any birds nesting in the area. If not, we'll have to go through the appeal process.
Yeah, and if there's birds nesting there, we might be looking at August possibly, but right. Hopefully they're not. Those particular birds aren't there.
Okay.
So, other water projects that are under development, unless there's a question on that particular project. I know staff has been working in discussions with Boyle Engineers on relocating the old water yard pumping station. So hope to have more description on that in future reports. That's a fairly significant project for our water department. The equipment's out of date and definitely needs to be replaced. So I'll add more to this report as I go on in the future. So that concludes my discussion.
Question, board members? Bob, the Stewart Street tank project, at what point in the year can we begin to turn our attention to that?
Yeah, actually, I want to tie that in with the water yard pump station replacement, at least get some preliminary design work started on that in parallel with that same project.
All right, good.
So you're looking probably a month or two out to get a scope of work pulled together.
And one last thing. I think you did a great job in explaining all of the processes we have to go through in order to get to the point where we can have an environmental impact report and a project description and so forth to get on with the desalination facility. Can you confirm that a lot of the work is being done in a multitasking sort of way? In other words, rather than waiting for specific processes to conclude, we're actually doing many of these processes simultaneously so that by the time we get to the environmental impact stage anyway, we'll have the Corps of Engineers well on board and we'll be ready to seriously address the design of the plant and the construction schedule and so forth.
Yes, and I have a schedule, and I know it would not be legible. There's 300 or so tasks that we have with various lines linking the logic together and so forth.
Right.
But there are a number of things happening in parallel to get a water supply secured. And I think one of the keys is going to be this geotechnical study that we're proceeding with ahead of the Army Corps work, because it is so critical to the environmental study that follows that. There's going to be some groundwater modeling that will rely on that data, for example, that will be used to support the defensibility of the environmental impact report. So that's all happening. It's coming together. It's fairly complicated. I can bring the schedule to the next meeting on that.
Director Coben?
I was going to say, I was hoping that some kind of a graphic could be put together that shows the interrelatedness of the various projects and how one has to affect each other and you can't move forward. So I assume that can be done, and it would help. Your words are really good, but when you see a visualization like that, I think it helps us lay people understand.
Certainly.
It. So that would be great.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. Any other questions?
Since this came up at this time.
While you're here, Bob, Director Villeneuve, would you like to say a few words about the Planning Commission process?
Yes. I'm glad that I have this opportunity, because I didn't make it to the Planning Commission meeting on February 10th. But I'd like to suggest that the district draft a maybe a letter of appreciation, and particularly from what I understand from other members of the board that attended that meeting, the role of the chairperson was critical in the providing a support and supporting information, guiding the rest of the board of commissioners, rather, to the decision they made. So I would suggest that may be appropriate.
I think that's entirely appropriate. Director Coben?
Well, I think we should add to that the Matt Jansen, the staff, because he did yeoman's work to make it come out in the correct way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've seen the correspondence from him, and definitely he's on our side.
Right. And while we're at it, I'd like to commend our own staff for the excellent and very dedicated and hard work put in on this. I think the presentation to the Planning Commission was thoroughly professional. All of the questions that were raised were answered in spades. I know you've worked on this, all of you, night and day. And it's a very, very critical infrastructure upgrade for this community. And I think your hard work is starting to pay dividends.
On the lighter side, we can say that we know with Bob it did. He was carrying at least three various carry-alls, carrying the things that he needed to present at that meeting.
And that's
right. He carted them all the way, all day long, and it was really quite a task.
Well, thank you, and we'll keep our fingers crossed, too, but I had some very good support from our consultants as well, and mainly Mike Nunley and Cesar Romero at Boyle Engineers. There was a Jim Burrows at Firma that was helping us with the illustrations and some of the layouts, as well as RBF also. So thank you very much.
Terrific. Thank you, Bob.
Mr. President?
Yes, Director Burrows.
In my recommendation, I just identified overlooked identifying who the chairperson was, and that's and I think that's important for the community to recognize that since she's also a resident of Cambria, and that's Doreen Loretto Blanc. That way we know who really is the chairperson and the one that guided this through the maze of the various permutations.
You bet. Absolutely. She is a resident of Cambria, and anybody who has had an occasion to watch the Planning Commission proceedings understands that she does a good job. Okay, we'll move on now to the General Manager's Report.
Okay, thank you.
Tammy?
Just a reminder to everyone about the Mission Country Disposal Spring Cleanup Week, because I was maybe a little lax last time. April 25th through the 29th. Excess trash and recycling and green waste can be left on a customer's regular pickup day. For Human Resources, we have two new water treatment operators, and Brian Bodie will introduce those later in his report. One replaces Ron Head, who transferred over to the Wastewater Department on the unfortunate passing of Roger Rebell. So Ron is taking that position in Wastewater. So we have one gentleman taking the place of Ron in the Water Department, and then the other employee hired will actually... We were a little proactive, and so we hired him in advance of Michael Beauchamp's retirement. So we've got him in training, and like I said, Brian will introduce him in his report. The recruitment for the reserve firefighter is almost complete. We actually have four candidates who will proceed to the physical agility test and the final interview with Chief Putney. And I wrote in my report about the conditional offer of employment made to our candidate for maintenance tech, and that person accepted and will be on board here in the next couple of weeks, given that there's passing of the pre-employment requirements. The advertising for the assistant fire chief is underway. The position announcement is on our website at www.cambriacsd.org. Interested candidates may also...
Those were just those people that danced the Charleston back in the 1920s, but
exactly.
I'm here to tell you that you have flappers in your house right now, and you should be checking on them. And I'm talking about the flapper valves in your toilet tanks. Did you know that a leaking toilet tank flapper can quietly waste many gallons of water a day? And the average lifespan of a toilet tank flapper is only 5 years. So how old are your flappers? Yours could be leaking and you may not even know it. So you should take a peek inside your toilet tank. It's okay. It's not icky in there. It's clean water. And check to see if your flapper valve is seating securely. It's the thing in the bottom of the tank that goes up and down, lets the water out, and keeps the water in when you're done. And the best way to see if your flapper is leaking is to put a dye tablet in your tank that you can get at the hardware store and see if any of the dye leaks down into the bowl before you flush. Replacement flapper valves are available at your local hardware store for $5 or less, and it's an easy fix even if you're just a little bit handy. You just turn off the... water valve under your toilet, flush to remove the water in the tank, unhook the old flapper valve, and take it to the hardware store with you to make sure that you get the right one, because there's a lot of different kinds and you definitely want to get the exact right one. Then you hook it back on, you according to the directions on the package, and turn the valve back on. And then while you're in there, you should check the water level in your tank when it's done filling, because if it's set too high, you could also be losing water over the top of the fill tube. And if it's too low, your toilet won't flush effectively. There's usually a mark inside the toilet tank or on the fill tube to indicate the proper water level. If you can't see a mark, set your water level about a half or 1 inch below the top of the fill tube. And if you don't know how to properly reset that, you should check with a professional. Voila, your toilet has just had a tune-up. Be sure to look for more water-saving tips in your CCSD newsletter or at cambriacsd.org. Thank you.
Joyce, I think you should give us a live demonstration. What do you say?
We'll just have to get one in here so we can do
right.
that.
Okay.
I would just think
that
you might have another
career in Comedy Central. That's
right.
Pretty good.
She can go into the plumbing business on the side. Okay, anything else, Tammy? Thank you. Any questions of the general manager? We'll now move to the fire chief's report. Chief Putney?
Thank you. If you could bring up my PowerPoint, please. I'm going to show you a couple of slides this morning. First thing is you have the response statistics for our department this year. 145 calls is a pretty busy year this year, but if you take into account that in January on that one day we had 50 emergency calls in one almost 9-hour period, that's why the run response statistics are so high so far for this year. We've been pretty busy at the department, looking forward to getting that assistant fire marshal, assistant fire chief, fire marshal on board so that I'm not multitasking, although all my staff's multitasking, so we're used to that. First thing I wanted to bring to your attention is a recent fire we had in a commercial building here in Cambria. It was a motel-hotel complex that's been converted into a commercial building, has multiple occupancies. Occupant of one of the occupancies went down to check on some paperwork on the weekend and was met at the door by a strong odor of natural gas. Underneath this picture here on the bottom, if my little laser beam here works well, on this side over here, he had a briefcase which had a brand new laptop computer in it that when pushed to the back, there's an electrical wire that comes down from the top, goes over here to the side and had staples in it. It's a regular household extension cord. And the prongs from that extension cord went into the wood and the sheetrock and it shorted out and caught the bag on fire that the laptop computer was in and started to melt the keyboard. Probably because the doors were closed and there wasn't enough in there to get burning. And once it shorted out and opened the circuit breaker, it heated up the pipe enough to start gas leaking, but fortunately the fire self-extinguished. If it hadn't, it probably would have blown up the entire complex. Ouch. And could have been a pretty serious fire. Next slide, please. So the reason I brought this up is that it's never a good idea to combine electricity and a household distribution of natural gas. That's a bad deal. Second thing is that in my 30 years in the fire service, I can't tell you how many homes and commercial businesses, even a Kmart, where I've seen massive destruction because of a household two-wire extension cord that was either improperly used, was old, or was stapled to the wall. I don't have any two-wire extension cords in my entire house. We throw them away. We have three-wire grounded extension cords for that reason. They're just not safe. And if you're not sure if it's safe or not, follow my advice, throw it out, and get a multi-plug adapter with one of those circuit breakers. Next slide, please. There's the laptop and all the connections. You can see that it pretty well fried. The good news is that everything else that was next to it was pretty well intact, and there wasn't much damage to the rest of the commercial building. So we felt very fortunate there. If anyone ever smells any gas, please don't investigate. The person was opened the door, went inside, smelled gas, started to proceed in, and the better part of valor told him that I probably shouldn't be in here. Reserves, we have several that I'm going to interview on Monday. We look forward to bringing them all on board. We're still using the Moonstone Beach facility for training, and we hope we're probably going to lose that in 2 months. So fairly soon here we're going to have a rapid intervention crew class, and we're also going to do a building shoring class. We have a lot of calls where vehicles go into a building and destabilize them structurally. So my goal is to give our fire department personnel a basic urban search and rescue training component that will allow them to do temporary shoring on a building to affect an interior search and rescue operation, then move out till a building official gets there, and then a professional company can support the building for, you know, permanent repair, at least until it's permanently repaired. So you'll see that building. And again, I remind the public, because we get calls, no, we are not going to burn it down. It's too close to the creek, and environmentally that would not be the good thing to do.
Old antique
That's store. The old Moonstone Beach Antique, correct.
Near Windsor.
That's
and
correct.
Highway 1.
Yeah, and we put a fence all the way around it. We have a gate on it, and the engine companies are there unless it's a busy day and we have storms almost once a day, because that's right now our only training facility in town, so we're using it to its full example. Correct. And we appreciate the owners of it letting us use it. I'm very proud to say not only did we swear in today two new engineers, but 3 days after we began and you approved three-person operation, our department members were successful in saving a Cambrian's life. This vehicle fire that you can see here on the picture is after the vehicle fire was doused. This is on Burton Drive, and you're looking down into the creek bed. If you go up there, you'll see two guardrails and some red flagging tape, and just below that you'll see this mowed path. That's where the car went down. Once the car left the road with a single male occupant inside, the gas tank underneath ruptured and the rear of the car caught fire. Next slide, please. In this picture, you can see the damage to the rear of the car. The whole underside of the car was gutted, and flames were keeping the occupant inside, coming up both the passenger and the driver's side door. Because we had three people on the engine, The ambulance was there first. They used an extinguisher and did nothing because it was a gasoline-fed fire. The engineer pulled a pre-connected line and started to push the flames back, which did not suppress the fire. The firefighter did the same thing, and they worked their way down, pushed the flames away enough that the two of them could get the driver, pry him out of the car, bring him up past the flames where the ambulance crew and our crew was able to get him up. Captain Mike Gallagher, Engineer Emily Singer, and Reserve Firefighter Damian Juarez were on the call. I asked Michael, I knew the answer because I was there. I was incident commander on the incident. Those bright lights in the background are my lights on the command vehicle. And I asked him, do you think you could have done that with three people? And he said, not in your life. He said, we couldn't have kept the flames back and got that man out. I guess somebody above us was watching over us, and I want to thank you for your wisdom in allowing us to put three people on, because the Cambrian's alive today because of that.
And that was the same Emily Singer that was just
sworn in today. Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, yeah. It made her very, very happy. She said, this is a great job. She was grinning from ear to ear.
That's
after
great.
The call. It's always great when you make a difference in somebody else's life. Next slide, please. Recently, I attended a conference in San Diego. We had been grappling as a department to try to figure out a way to buy a thermal imaging camera, which is almost $10,000. For most communities, they have them. We're not the wealthiest of communities. It's a big hit for our budget to buy a $10,000 camera. I'll show you in a minute what this will do. I don't have the camera here today, and I'll explain why in a minute. But I went to the conference, and afterwards, there was a get-together where they were giving away multiple prizes. The grand prize was a thermal imaging camera. I was in the right place at the right time. Someone superior to us was looking over us, and my ticket was the winning ticket for that $9,000 thermal imaging camera that's up there. We took possession of it. I thank the people. Mallory Fire Safety were the people who donated the camera. Its retail value is $8,500. Being the conniver and good negotiator that I am, I met with the corporate president of MSA who was there, who was thanking me and saying, we couldn't afford to buy a $10,000 thermal imaging camera, but we can certainly afford to upgrade this one so it does everything that if we did have the money to buy one, it would do everything. So I work with them, and that camera needs $2,000 worth of improvement to make it do everything that is reasonable, not bells and whistles. And they sent me a bill the other day for $1,200. They're going to donate $800 worth of the upgrades. The camera's back. They're going to give us a brand new camera. They'll provide one-day training for us, and we will be the first fire department north of Morro Bay on the Central Coast to have a thermal imaging camera.
That's
next
terrific.
Slide, please.
And you won this at the convention.
At this get together where everybody shows their wares and tries to get people educated as to new equipment that's in the fire service and what's available. This is one of our firefighters using the thermal imaging camera. It's a pistol grip type device. Next slide. This isn't a great picture, but it shows you that there's a screen and then the next picture after this. If the room was pitch black, what firefighters would see is the outline of that person's body because of the dissimilar temperature. What this really means that we can do is in a smoke-filled building, we can find a person inside very, very quickly. The camera is designed to take very high heat temperatures. In California this year, in the first 2 months, products for this donation because it's huge for our community. Otherwise, it would probably be a grant or years before we could afford a camera.
Absolutely. I think that goes without saying.
Real quickly to wrap this up, next couple of slides. Recently, you asked last month if I keep you apprised of some of the streets that have been damaged by storms. Sunbury and Hillcrest have stayed together in the last storms. They've still not been widened yet. The county has that planned for later. Actually, the county has approached me, and I wanted to inform you that they are. We've talked together now, and I think that we all agree that the best thing to do on Sunbury is to talk about having a community meeting and discussing either making it one way or two-way with no parking on either side on the narrow section. So we're going to be doing a community meeting jointly, San Luis Obispo County Roads Department and our department as well. And we will notice the people in the area that affects and then make sure that everybody's informed so they can come and at least have their voice heard and hear the problems and the concerns we have with. I look forward to Hillcrest being widened sometime this summer, especially in the narrow part. That's
Chief,
a concern.
Chief, while you're on that subject, would you remind everybody here in the audience and those that will see the tape at home that it's virtually impossible for you to get your fire equipment up and down those streets if somebody is parking on the street? They are so narrow. Do you want to kind of go into that for a
absolutely.
Minute?
The problem we run into is twofold. We have the threading the needle problem where people park on opposite sides of the streets, directly opposite from each other, and force us, and I think a good litmus test is the trash trucks. The trash truck drivers, their supervisor calls the department all the time. Is there something you can do about Sunbury? Is there something you can do about Croydon? Can you do something about Benson? It's invariably, it's 7 or 8 times a month about people parking directly opposite each other. If the trash truck can't get through, we're not a whole bunch narrower. So we can't get through either. We have to slow down to an idle. And if people park at all non-parallel to the side where the end of the car or the RV or the boat's out in the street, there have been times at night where we honk the air horn, go door to door, knock them up because it's too far to back up, and try to wake up the person whose car that is in the street to move it so we can get by. So it's a huge problem. Some of the streets are so narrow that if one car does not park as far to the edge as possible, it's very difficult for us to get around because we weigh 40,000 pounds. And you put 40,000 pounds of fire engine within 6 inches of sheer vertical cliff, which that exists a lot in Cambria, and it's wet, the roadside's liable to go off, and then we have 3 firefighters dead and a $400,000 piece of equipment at the bottom that may have crashed through somebody's house. So we don't go near the edge of the road in the summer or the winter for that reason, nor do the trash trucks, the cement trucks, or any of the dump trucks. So it's a big problem. We ask people park responsibly. Amazingly enough, visitors do a fairly good job, but often they're ignorant. A lot of people that come home figure it's night, what's the big deal, nothing's going to happen, but 70% of our calls are emergency medical calls. And that big red fire engine is often the second arriving piece of equipment or the first arriving piece of equipment that may be carrying life-saving equipment with skills on board to save that person's life. And if we're delayed in getting there, we can't do what we need to do. So it's imperative for everybody that we strive for the statewide standard, which is a 20-foot wide street, and that's no parking. 20-foot wide is that's no parking allowed on either side. We have very few streets in Cambria that allow for 4 or 5 feet on each side of parking on a 20-foot wide street, so you're looking at a 30-foot wide street, and we don't have many of those. I also wanted to mention about Burton. Burton Slide's been cleared. It was closed for several days. We had to use alternative routes. We did work with the county. They tried to keep one lane open. My department, I issued an order that I deferred from responding that direction because we still had rocks coming down. I didn't think it was worth one of our people's lives. It's cleared now, but if you go up, you'll see a large developing debris pile on the upslope side of the roadway, and it continues to come down. The county's watching it, and they may have to put some sort of temporary bracing up there, and it's only going to be a matter of time over the next 5 or 10 years that some more of that hillside is going to come down. So I'd ask everybody to be careful and just be vigilant in that area. Next slide. Here's them cleaning it when they cleaned it all up. Next slide. This occurred the day, actually the evening of the rock slide. This is a car that was headed southbound on Highway 1 and hit a tree just north of Burton Drive that went all the way across Highway 1. They didn't see it in the dark and hit it at 55 miles an hour. We closed the roadway down. The person inside, airbags deployed. They were rescued safely between our engine crews and CDF Station 10. We used chainsaws before Caltrans could get there and open up traffic. We controlled and diverted traffic at Cambria Drive and Burton Drive. And in the course of doing that, the people at Burton Drive almost got hit once by an errant driver. I was controlling traffic at Cambria Drive and almost got hit twice by 2 different vehicles. The second vehicle, the person was obviously impaired. I was able to get a hold of a CHP officer at scene, and they arrested the driver in the middle of Cambria doing 70 miles an hour for driving under the influence. So we were very fortunate at that light. We not only got somebody off the road, but we didn't get any of our people killed as well. Next slide. Here's part of the tree that they're cutting up that came across the roadway. And next slide. This is a tree that came down in the recent storm, probably the one that did the most damage, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $50,000 damage to the home. Since Monday of this week, we've had about 5 large trees come down in Cambria and damage the homes. Again, property owners were out assessing the tree, touching them, going around them, not realizing that when these trees came down, they brought the power line down from the service drop to your house to the power pole. And it was kind of embedded inside because they come down and they're under tension. So I know I mentioned it last month. I'm going to be a broken record, but please be careful and watch what you're touching because there could be a power line wrapped around it. We don't touch anything till we do a 360-degree walking around. And if there's a cable line wrapped up in it, we consider it energized because a cable line 100 yards down could be draped over a power line and the trees and the power lines and the power poles jockeying back and forth. They get flipped over each other. I think that's it, or is there one more slide? That's the root ball. Typically this time of year, we see that the root balls that go over, it's the live trees that go all the way, and we use flares or fusees very little. We put out cones that meet Caltrans standard, and we have roadway flashers that are brighter than flares that we put up all across the road. These people had a half a mile to slow down. You know, we weren't around a blind corner and go the other way, and a couple of them tried to run around in and get past because they just had to get through, even though the road's blocked all the way across. There's red lights, white lights, and Jim was laughing because he's seen us when we're out at the scene. We went from minimally marking the scene now to being very safe, because my goal is to make sure all of our people and the public goes home at the end of the day, that nobody gets killed. So, yeah, we take marking the roads very, very seriously and making sure everything's well identified.
So firemen can jump.
Yeah, I did that night. Yeah. I swung at the car to hit the hood and jumped out of the way at the same time.
So. Wow, dangerous job. Any other questions of Chief Putney? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
We'll now have the utility manager's report. Brian Bodie.
Before I get started, Tammy made this pretty easy for me, but I'd like Jim to come up and introduce Robert and Jason, new employees at the water.
Please.
Mr. President, Board, we have two new members, water treatment operators.
Great.
Jason Buell.
Jason, how are you?
And Robert Reason.
Robert, welcome.
Pleasure. Thanks. Do you have any questions of these two? Or
just sympathy. They have to work for you.
Thank you very much.
I'd just like to say that I'm really happy to be here and look forward to serving our community. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
I'm going to make this one short. There's no video or anything like that today. The wells are full. They're probably going to be full for a couple more months. So
I would
won't
hope
bore
so.
You with looking at the same charts over and over again. And hopefully we'll keep, you know, the rains will kind of mosey off a little bit, but it's March is coming up, and March is usually a real wet month for us.
Brian, on that point, you might take just a minute to remind everybody that it's not how much it rains, it's when it rains.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I, you know, not everybody's been here for a long time, but good point. Last year, the rain stopped the end of February, about right now, and that normally would give us a shortfall. We'd probably run out of water around November, December. And so if we can get a 2-inch rain around the end of April, somewhere that in that area, just enough to push it out to the ocean so everything's topped off, that'll get us to the next rain season.
Great.
And at least we'd like to get to the next March, because we have experience with not having rain till the next following March. So
right.
We know that can happen, so just to be cautious. If we don't get rain late in April, we'll probably put out the caution notice, and we might have to impose the little penalties and have to hold back on our water. But we'll wait and see what happens. We've been working on some digital imaging for the office. I know the county just went out for a contract, so we're going to be looking at their contract a little bit. Also, we're going to look at another company called Laserfish to take a look at them, and we'll be working on that. Salt is dewatering on the screw press. That's in the county right now for minor use permit. And once we get that in hand, we'll go out and go out to bid for the project. We're also working on automatic meter reading. We've got a couple other contractors that we looked at to install the meters. We should be taking receipt of half the meters for the whole district in the next few weeks. East-West Ranch Pipeline, they've pressure tested it. They're disinfecting it. We don't have the tests back yet on the disinfection, but providing that the disinfection is well, they'll start putting the meters in Seacliff Estates next week. So that's moving along pretty good.
And there's a valve that has to be installed?
There's two. There's one, two. One on each end, but they can put the services in because they'll be able to feed from either end and close either end down at that time. I just want to make a comment. On February 17th, we actually... contractor had to flush that line. It's a large line. It's a 10-inch line, and it's just something that has to be done. At the same time, our policy, because of shortage of water, has been not to flush our own lines and in the system, because we need to flush them usually in the summertime, and that's when we're short of water, and it's not really politically correct to be blowing water out on the street while you're telling everybody else to hold back. So we've held back on implementing a full-blown program of flushing our own water lines. And because of that, there's a lot of sediment that gets in the lines, and anytime you move the lines hard, like flushing, or say you have a fire and the fire hydrant needs to be opened wide open, the water will move in the lines very fast and roil the sediment in there. And it can look pretty bad. We had one customer that came in with two beer glasses, was pretty upset, and the one beer glass was clear, looked like Zima, and the other one looked like ale, and he was very upset that he wasn't told about it. And we just can't tell everybody, but we try. But obviously we overlooked him, and the water looks pretty bad, but it's pretty bad.
Much more of these circumstances arise. Maybe not as bad as what Brian's referring to, but it's going to happen, and everything should clear up once the pipeline's online and operating properly. It should only take a couple days for the water to clear and get back to normal.
Good. Thank you. Next report is from the district engineer, but Bob, I think you covered everything in your previous report. Is that correct?
That's correct. I could answer questions on other projects that might come to mind, but I'm going to defer to what Brian has mentioned on the East-West Ranch water pipeline. I'd only add that depending on weather, probably sometime in March is that when those two vaults will most likely get wrapped up. That's going to be weather-dependent, so that's what we're looking for at the end of the project.
Any questions of the district engineer?
Okay, thank you.
And finally, the finance officer, Patrick Bradley. I hope you bring us glad tidings.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. You know, after watching these slides from the fire department on these dramatic rescues and winning camera tickets and a discussion on flappers, I totally feel anticlimactic up here. I cannot top that.
It doesn't get any better than flappers, does it?
No, it's
really a tough
doesn't.
Act to follow.
You have my report in front of you. I would just like to elaborate on a couple of items in there. One is the PERS retirement. When I put the budget together, I actually used figures from PERS. And just recently we got their new actuarial study, and obviously their retirement number has increased rather dramatically. I don't know why. I'm going to try and find out. So I didn't want to just mention somehow we'll have to work that into the budget.
You mean the cost to the district has increased?
That's correct. The cost to the district has increased. And on the other side, the flip side of that, I mean, obviously that's a cost to the district. On the other side, which is where we're trying to save the district some money, is we've had a recent resignation in the admin department. And because we know budgets are tight and we're really trying to work as best as we can with the existing staff, we are going to make a dedicated effort to realign the duties at the administrative office and not fill that position. That's what our goal is, and we're really going to try and do that. And I really would like to acknowledge the administrative staff at the district office for willing to take on this effort, because they're all going to pick up a little bit of added duties. And they're all doing it very willingly and joyfully. Well, maybe not joyfully, but... don't get carried away. They're willing to give it a try. So so that's where we are with that, and hopefully it'll work. If it doesn't, well, then we'll just have to fill a position. But the one thing that is paramount in all of this is that we do not damage the integrity of the accounting system and our internal controls, because that we still need to keep intact. And the last thing I just wanted to mention is, we go through this every year, and we still don't have the, I'm going to have to battle with Chevron for the payment on a water tender. So that's all I have.
That's a constant battle, though.
It is. Yeah. That is true.
But they always come through.
Yeah, they do.
Right.
Hopefully.
Just keep on them, Patrick.
Reluctantly.
Yes, exactly.
That concludes my report. Are there any comments or questions?
Any questions of the finance officer? Thank you, Patrick. We will now move to board member and committee reports. I would like to... Oh, Jerry, you have a comment?
I would like a question answered by the fire chief. His name is Jerry McKinnon.
Yes.
He's talking about the narrowness of roads. I would hope he would put the public to rest by telling us that he is satisfied in the narrowness of the road on Main Street by those two islands. Are those to your satisfaction? Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Chief, you have a response?
Yes, I do. My response is I don't know if I'm satisfied or not.
I'll qualify that. When they first posed putting those planters in the center, we were told that we would be able to, they would be filled in inside, and that the paving would be put up to the edge so that we could drive over them. Now I'm told that the paving won't come up to the edge of those, and I understand they're going to sublet a new contract. So when the new contract comes out to finish those, I'm going to clarify and see what they have in writing, and if they're going to stay as high as they are now, no, I will not be satisfied. If they're going to be something that we can drive over and around, then I will be satisfied. So it's yet to be determined.
Would you keep us posted on that?
Absolutely.
Chief? Thank you. We will now move to board member and committee reports. I would like to start off by very briefly reporting on the trip to Washington, D.C. that the general manager, Director Villeneuve, and I took. I'm losing track of time. 2 weeks. Appropriate the money that is eventually spent on the plant, will be spent on the plant. I, having had several years' worth of experience working on Capitol Hill for a congressman, I know a good advocate when I see one, and I want the community to know that, we have excellent representation in Washington, D.C., and that representation, I believe, is beginning to pay big dividends. Our project is viewed as one that is worthy of federal participation. In fact, in the eyes of many of the members of Congress that we met with, it's a model. It's a model because we have a very environmentally sensitive community. We've taken the issue of growth into our own hands, and we're proceeding with our lot reduction study. And those kinds of moves that we have made do not go unnoticed by those in Washington, D.C. who are responsible for authorizing and appropriating the money for our desalination plant. There, by the end of this year, there should be about $1 million in previously appropriated monies and monies that will be appropriated for the coming fiscal year available to be spent on this project by the Corps of Engineers. And I have, and I think Director Villeneuve and the General Manager share this sentiment, I have every reason to believe that when it comes time to build the plant, that Congress will be there with the money to help us out. In connection with the trip to Washington, D.C., we did meet with Congresswoman Lois Capps, to whom we owe a great debt of gratitude because she is chiefly responsible for shepherding all of this through the Congress. When it comes time for the Corps of Engineers and the district to execute the Project Cooperative Agreement, which is the formal agreement between the district and the Corps of Engineers that will allow the Corps to proceed to spend the money on this project, we plan on having a ceremony here in Cambria. We'd like to honor Lois Capps for the work that she has done, give her the recognition that she is due. That should occur within a month or two, and we'll certainly let the community know when that will be scheduled. Director Villeneuve, anything you'd like to add?
No, except for one other factor. As a matter of fact, this is the list that we had for our day at the on the Hill, and it started at 9 a.m. and we were at the last one sometime about what, 4?
And then if you include the reception hosted by the Association of California Water Agencies, went well on into the evening.
Yeah, and that I also want to point out to the that it was not that one day, but this was all tied in with the annual legislative conference of the AQUA, which is the Association of California Water Agencies. So there was a good deal of that going on starting on Tuesday, and then finishing up on Thursday at noon. So this has been a very fruitful effort, and this is the second or third time that we've piggybacked on the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. and do this lobbying in conjunction with the AQUA meetings, which also a lot of the sessions there bore directly on our interests. So it's the squeaky wheel is the one that gets the grease, and that's basically the opportunity to get FaceTime with the people that really control the appropriations. So
that's right, and I think the squeaky wheel getting the oil is a good way to put it. We're all aware of all of the competing demands that are made on Congress for a piece of the federal budget. And unless you take the time to go to Washington, D.C. and plead your case, the chances are will not get the kind of recognition necessary, and you just don't get your project funded. So I think the trips are very necessary, and as I say, I think they're really beginning to bear fruit. Any other board committee reports? Hearing none, we'll
inch water service for development projects. And 7E is to appoint John Colgan and Richard Macedo to the Ad Hoc Incorporation Blue Ribbon Committee.
Thank you. The motion has been made to approve the consent calendar as read. Is there a second?
I'll second. Double second.
The clerk is to choose which one she wants to report in the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? Motion carries. It seems that this may be an appropriate point in the meeting to take a short break, so we will take a break for 5 minutes, and we'll be back at 5 minutes after 2:00.